We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. Also pleased to have back on the program here once again the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And for a long time, he's been stopping by. We do the show on the first Wednesday of the month, and we talk about food and cooking, and we always have a good time when he is here. He picks some topic. We have talked about particular dishes. We've talked about key ingredients. We've talked about a lot of different things. And the idea is that that's at least where we start. Sometimes we stroll and wander and go different places with it. But that's where we start. And the idea is that people have recipes to share. That's wonderful. It's always a lot of fun to hear from folks. Sometimes they just have a story to tell about food they have known and why it is that particular things are special. Sometimes it's because they're associated with their family, with their growing up. Sometimes maybe it's a particular thing. It's something that you only have one time, and that's what makes it very special. Anyway, so he said this time around, well, he's thinking about pesto, the kind, and I'm sure we'll talk about here, talking about, well, the kind that's made with basil and olive oil and Parmesan cheese. A lot of people now, by this point, have had this dish.
And pine nuts.
And they've had it on pasta. But he says, well, you know, there are actually a lot of other things that you can do with it. And in fact, you can make other kinds of pestos. So that's the challenge here. We're certainly interested in hearing from people who are listening. Maybe you have a good recipe. You'll share it with us. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So at any point here you want to join in, you're welcome to do that. Welcome back.
Well, as a matter of fact, thank you. This is my anniversary. This is my 50th year at the University of Illinois.
Good, congratulations. Now, you are an emeritus professor,
oh, yes,
are you not?
Oh, yes.
Yes, okay. 50 and, years, really?
Well, it came in 1959, in September, and we're in September.
And I expect that it's Champaign-Urbana is a different place than it was 50 years ago.
Oh, except in spirit. I've always enjoyed the spirit of Champaign. I've always thought that we were way ahead of a lot of other places. And in traveling around and doing the things that I did, I know that we were because a lot of the people here spend their summers somewhere else, you know, and they go and they would come back and bring influences that they'd gotten that summer back to this university. Mm-hmm. For example, there were bell-bottom trousers here in 1972, long before there were in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah, and really? You could not buy mushrooms in many places in the country, but we always had them here. I mean, funny little things like that, and that in the 60s, when everyone was wearing textured stockings. Not everyone. The women were wearing textured stockings. I was sort of on a travel around the country, and I thought, well, it'll be fun to get a little present of little. So I was at in Texas at what's the big store in Texas?
Needless Markup.
Yeah, exactly. I was there. They had one pair. And I went down to Mr. Ritchie's dry goods store in Atlanta, one pair. I went to Chicago to Bonwit Teller, one pair. I came back to Champaign. There were five pairs. I'm talking about designs. There were five designs available in Champaign when I could only find in the oddest part. So I always laughed at the fact that we have always been ahead of anybody else. So I love it.
All right. Well, glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So it was there – I always ask this question. So – pesto, was there some particular reason that you were thinking about it?
Yes, I had some. I made some pesto. I mean, this is the time to make it. I'm a snob about pesto. I will not make it in the winter. I will not. If you can't make it fresh, I don't want it. And to me, it is a taste that is so exotic. I mean, the pesto made with basil is so exotic that I really revere it. I mean, like I have strawberries every day, even in January. So you see, I'm split on that, but not on pesto. And you have to make nice large amounts of it. I mean, and I love going down to the market and getting a great big handful of pesto or basil. Because I know I can make it that. And so I did that a couple of times, and I thought, you know, there was a time, even in Champaign Urbana, capital of the world, that no one knew what pesto was. There was a time. It was not a known product until I think it was – well, I know that my first involvement with it was around 1972. Mm-hmm. And I remember serving it. I remember serving it to a family that had come from Chicago. They were a family of a student here. And I made pesto and served it on the back porch. They had never heard of it. They'd never tasted it. They were so completely knocked out by it. They were just absolutely ecstatic about it and went home and made a herb garden and planted basil. Yeah. And you see, that was as late as 1972. And it just simply was not known. And just on my own research, I thought, now, wait a minute. Come on. Julia must have known about pesto. Nope. In none of Julia's books.
Well, it's not a French thing.
No, it's kind of Italian.
It's Italian thing.
And it was originally made with a mortar and pestle.
They didn't have food processors in those days.
No, they did not. And that is another thing that has made it very possible is that we now whirl this up in the food process, and it is wonderful. And if you had to sit there and mash that, the word comes from the Italian word of paste. I think it's P-E-S-T-A. And so a pesto is something that was made as a paste, and no one would have known about it. I mean, you'd have had one of those ancient Roman stone mortars, you know, to be heavy enough to mash all that, and you'd sit there and mash all these things together. It was the same end product, because pine nuts and olive oil and cheese, grated cheeses and garlic and basil. So that was it. You made it and you put it on spaghetti. That was it for a goodly length of time. But so why I was thinking about that was I was sort of recalling that experience of since I was here in 1972, recalling that experience and realizing that pestos have gone way, 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 way beyond that, and they are used in many different ways, and I'm sort of interested about people's acceptance of what those different ways are, because they're going to be new to our cuisine in the last number of years. I went to World Harvest yesterday, and I found 23 kinds of pestos. 23. There were 12 of them that were fresh in the cooler, and the rest of them were jarred. And pick what you want, and you can get a mashed up version of it. And many of them asserted that they were meant for a pasta, but a lot of them are used on bruschettas, and some of them are even dipped into a soup. And so I remembered, before I came here, before 50 years ago, I remembered being at a party at the University of Iowa where some fancy graduate student dude appeared at the party. And the party was given by one of the faculty members. And, of course, with his great I come from New York City attitude, he walked over to the to the bubbling pot. Oh, pea stew, pea stew. And, of course, we were falling on the floor. And it took me a long time to find there is such a thing, and Julia does make it. But it is not pesto that is used in making pea stew. You make something like it, but all you do is mix it up. You don't mash it and grind it and do all the things. It's the same combination of nuts and basil and olive oil and cheese, and that is sort of just mashed up. You chop it up and then you stir it up and you try to emulsify it with the olive oil. Mm-hmm. And then that is put in the bottom of the bowls, and then a rich vegetable soup is poured over that. And so then it kind of bubbles and comes up to the top. But that's the only reference that we would have had of anything like that as early as 59.
Mm. Okay.
So I'm interested in what people are doing. Even if they're and I want to know the secrets, because there are secrets on how to make a good pesto and how to use it, and we'll talk about that too. So
Doyle Moore is here. He's the man we like to call our chef in residence here at WILL. Now, folks, let me tell you something here. This title, it's purely honorary, but he has been our guy for a long time now. He stops in first Wednesday of the month, and we talk about cooking. We pick a topic and exchange stories and cooking tips and recipes and always have a good time. And this time around, he said, well, he's interested in pesto. Maybe you have some particular quirk to the way that you make the thing that we all know with basil. Or a new variation, because there are different, because as he said, well, all that this really means is paste, you know. So you can do something like, you can use that same technique with different ingredients. And then the question is, well, besides maybe you like to have that on fettuccine or something like that, well, what else do you do with that? What else can you do with that? And as he said, there are a lot of different things, different applications as a kind of on soup, for example, as a kind of a little garnish. You put a little dollop on there when you put it in the bowl. There are people who use it as a sandwich spread. You can also use it in pizza, various sorts of ways.
Oh, yes.
There's lots of different things you can do. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Is there really, you know, if you're thinking about the thing that we have now come to know with the oil, the garlic, the nuts, the cheese, and the basil, is there really some different way to do it?
A different way? Well, with the blessing of the cuisinier, and not everyone has one, but I bet there aren't very many people that don't have one. With that, it makes it very, very easy to make this emulsified mixture and be very successful every time that you do it. But of course, I have never witnessed, nor have I dared even try to mash it up with mortar and pestle. Although I have one, and it's big and heavy, and marble, very old, and a nice wooden pestle, and I have not dared to even want to try that, because I just whip it up in the cuisinier.
Yeah, it's way too easy to do.
And always successful, yeah. and it works quite well. So,
all right, let's talk with some folks here.
Oh yes,
starting with someone here in our area where we are, line one, Champaign. Hello.
Hi, I just have a very quick question. You said pesto on fettuccine. I can't find fettuccine noodles anywhere in this town anymore. Where are they?
Well, I'm sure it would shock me if you couldn't buy fettuccine at the Art Mart or at World Harvest or even at Schnucks. You could buy
Schnucks and County Market are not carrying.
They don't have it
anymore.
Really?
Spaghetti and linguine and all sorts of, you know, rotini, which is, you know, wonderful with pesto. But I'd really like some fettuccine.
Huh. Well, that's something to think about.
Well, as far as I know, last time I was in the Art Mart, you know, they have the DiCecco brand, which is a really nice Italian brand of pasta, and I would be shocked if they didn't have fettuccine.
Well, I will try Art Mart.
Or next. Also, you know, go see our friends at World Harvest. It would also surprise me if they did not have fettuccine at World Harvest.
I'm just surprised that it's not any longer in the regular grocery stores, aren't you?
Well, yes, I am.
Maybe they somehow think it's, you know, it's that basically people want macaroni or spaghetti, or maybe if they're feeling really adventurous, one of those corkscrew shapes. And I don't know, you know, why it is that they shouldn't, you know, I don't know. Maybe people say, fettuccine, it's too wide. We don't need that. I don't know.
Okay.
That's very strange.
Maybe some insights into the matter.
Well, maybe somebody who's listening knows where it is, and they'll call while we're here. So
keep listening.
All right. Thank you very much. To Bye. Chicago, this is somebody who's calling on a cell phone from Chicago, line 2. Hello.
Hi. I hope that this is not anathema to the chef, but I think an excellent version, a little lower calorie version of pesto is to use half chicken broth.
Oh.
And have olive oil.
Yes.
And everything else stays the same.
That sounds like a very reasonable way of doing exactly. See, in the 70s, we weren't that interested in a reduction of fat. And so you have done exactly what I wanted to know about is what innovations have you made to make this a part of your work. So I think that's a good idea.
In all honesty, this was not my idea, but it was a gentleman's idea who was teaching a teaching class in Minneapolis.
Yes.
And I just thought it was a really good idea, and that's the way I make my pesto.
Well, there's another good reason for that, too, because we haven't talked about this, but I will quickly allude to it. After you have made a nice, good, thick pesto, what you use is some of the pasta water and thin it down. And so the use of the chicken broth is not really, really, oh, dear, this is a horrible thing to do. It would really be something that you would probably want to do, even if you had made a very thick, heavy pasta, a pesto. I got to get these P words straightened out here. So you want to make it so you can coat the pasta that you're going to use, and so you thin it. You always save a little bit of the water that it was boiled in. You've got hot water, and you've mixed it up into it, and it makes a much lighter mix, and then it'll spread very quickly, and it won't end up being a big glob. I kind of ignored that the other night, and I worked a half an hour trying to get the pesto mashed around in through the angel hair, and angel hair is hard to cover with heavy thick pesto. So
that makes a lot of sense.
Well,
usually is a little too thick. I've never really seen how to go over pasta comfortably, but that makes a lot of sense.
That is, put some more chicken broth in it. You'll like it. Good. Thank you very much. Great
thank
idea.
You.
Very
well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Or if you're not worried about calories, just use some more oil. Some good. Really good olive oil. This is one of the places where you pull out your best olive oil to make this.
Was that EVOO?
EVOO. Yummo. line 3 is next in Urbana. Hello.
This is more of a story than a recipe.
Good.
I just wanted to mention that you can sometimes get pizza margherita. I don't know how you pronounce it. In local restaurants here, which has cheese and tomatoes, and it's drizzled with pesto.
Oh, I've not had the pesto drizzled on it, but I can imagine that would be very, very good.
But the colors are what's significant with the name. And it's not margherita like the drink.
Yes.
It's margherita. It's for the Queen Margherita of Italy. I don't remember when she was the queen, but... And the colors are the colors of the Italian flag.
Oh, and so the green on the pesto.
Right, right. So there's a story that goes with your pizza. You have pizza margherita.
Yes, I didn't know that, and I often do get one, but that's what I was thinking. I don't remember it having pesto on top.
It's very simple.
I'll go out and route them around and say, "Come on, where's the green on the queen's on the queen's pizza?"
I also, unlike you, like to have... Here I am standing here right now making pesto.
Oh.
And I was doing it before you came on.
Oh, good.
And I'm freezing it because I like to have I like to be able to add a fresh basil taste to various things in the wintertime. And it certainly makes a quick meal to make. We call it green spaghetti when we put it on pasta.
Oh, good. Yes.
You can stick it on all kinds of things. And freezing it in ice cube trays makes it really easy to pop out amounts that you need and defrost it gently. So there's my point of view.
Well, I approve of that because I do like that idea of saving and keeping. It's just that I just get stubborn and I thrill so much at the smell of basil and what it is, and somehow that just is not a smell I want to smell in the middle of December.
Well, I can sympathize.
but I think if we come up with some extra uses, I may extend then that use past just the putting it on pasta. I could see myself say, well, now wait, come on. You have a little bit of this and a little bruschetta that you're making, and that would be a nice taste. And I think I could tolerate that one.
Okay, gotta go. Gotta
thank you.
My
go thanks. Get it finished.
Next up, we'll
get
talk
her
with
done.
Somebody in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Hi, this is David from World Harvest.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So do you have fettuccine?
Yes, we have many different kinds of fettuccine.
Excellent.
We have regular and spinach. We have low-carb wild mushroom and basil fettuccine. We have lots and lots of different kinds of fettuccine.
Well, good. I know it's there. And I know you got those 27 jars and and cans of pesto there.
Yeah, we enjoyed seeing you yesterday.
Lemon and artichoke?
Yeah.
Lemon and artichoke is one. And that one caused my eyes to reel. But just the very idea that these things are made up into savory pastes. That's really what you're talking about, is savory paste.
That's right.
I don't think that there's a sweet one.
I don't think so. Pesto definitely isn't limited to just basil.
No, it is not. And do you make your own, whenever you want to make it, do you make your own?
I do. I grew some basil this summer.
I was just wondering if you used any other additions.
I haven't personally, but I've had some with other additions.
I know of someone who is making one with arugula.
Yeah.
And I know right after, see, there was a time when you can't buy basil.
That's right.
And you could only maybe just get a few little leaves of it. And so immediately they added parsley, which is available all the time, added parsley to it and made this parsley basil mix. That was one of the first additives. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting that they do that. And then that just went on and on. I think somebody even talked, in fact, you even have a cilantro one there.
Yeah, now that I think about it, a few years ago I did make a cilantro pesto.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes basil is prohibitively expensive.
The time, yes. And, well, again, when you can walk down the farmer's market and get a handful, you know,
yeah,
that's different from getting $7 worth and ending up with four leaves.
Yeah.
That's very good.
That's why it's best to do it when you grow it in your garden.
Exactly.
You can use a whole plant for a batch of pesto.
Exactly. And, of course, I used to very carefully pick off every little leaf
from
the garden. And recently, just chop it off. It's going to be gone anyway. It never lasts past the first freeze anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So just grow some more. That's very good.
And okay, there's so many different kinds of basil you can grow, too. There's purple basil.
Oh, yes.
Cinnamon basil, things like that.
And everyone, I love people who now are, well, I don't care for that kind. I prefer the oak leaf. Okay, have some oak leaf. You have some globe. You have some lemon. Have whatever you want. You know,
yeah.
I'm just glad that you're making it and doing something with it.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Yes.
Thanks for the call.
Nice talking to you.
And one of the things about basil is that it's incredibly easy to grow from seed. If you just, all you have to do is get yourself a pot, put potting soil in there,
yep,
find a sunny spot, sprinkle the seeds on there, it grows.
I have a friend here in town who starts it even before that. I mean, you know, it's and he grows it. He grows it very intensely in a long, long, narrow pot. So there's a lot of it growing, and starts it very, very early, so that in just the very first possible day that you could ever put something outside, he's got something that's 2 inches tall, yeah, and is already cropping very, very, very young basil. That is exotic.
We're at our midpoint. Our guest, the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. For a long time, he's been stopping by here on the program for the first Wednesday, the first show, first Wednesday of the month, talking about cooking, picking some sort of topic, and we trade stories and cooking tips and recipes. And this time around, he said pesto. He's interested. First of all, he's interested in the, you know, the regular basil pesto that we pretty much know. Something that you might want to do with that. What can you do with that other than putting it on pasta, which is a fine thing? But there are different things you can do with it. And then there are different kinds of pestos. You know, we mentioned that there are some that you can go to the store and you can buy them right off the shelf. But you also can whip up stuff in your own processor and use different sorts of things. And if you can't get basil, well, there are other things that you can use. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And on to Urbana, line number two.
Hi. I have a couple of different ideas that I use for pesto on pasta. One is from Marcella Hazen's book, and it's Pesto Bolognese, and you steam little tiny potatoes, which you can get at the farmer's market right now, mm-hmm, and the wonderful fresh green beans, and you toss it with, I toss it with whole wheat spaghetti, but linguine, fettuccine, whatever, and your pesto.
Green beans and potatoes and pasta.
Whatever pasta, yeah.
Yeah, and then mix that. Well, there you go.
And, of course, top it with cheese. So, and then another one is from a restaurant that we used to eat at in Bethesda, Maryland. They called it spaghetti alla Florentine, and it had Italian sausage out of its casing, so it was fried up in little tiny bits,
uh-huh,
and then also fresh spinach, which you tossed with the just-finished pasta.
Oh, yes.
And then you mixed it all up with the pesto and topped it with cheese.
Sounds good. Awfully good.
I would eat that.
That
is delicious. And then for alternative pestos, when I lived in China, I couldn't get basil because it's considered a medicine, so nobody liked it, nobody grew it. We used cilantro and twisted almonds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cilantro.
That was really, really good, especially since I was so much missing my pesto. And it was a good substitute. The almonds and the cilantro, the sweetness of the cilantro with the almonds was just delicious.
Now, how did you come by making pesto the first time? I mean, when did you run into pesto?
I would say when I lived in Washington, D.C., I moved there in 1992.
Oh, well, yeah.
Up to then, my mother's Italian, but Southern Italian, and so we really didn't do pesto. But when I moved to Washington, D.C. with their incredible array of restaurants and everything, and all the international people that I met there, that's when I met pesto.
Well, it did take off and become very, very popular, yes.
Well, I immediately fell in love with it. You know, you walk into the farmer's market and you smell the fresh,
yes, yes,
basil, and I have
exactly,
to buy,
exactly,
and buy the fresh green beans, and then I go through the potatoes, you know, and I pick out all the little tiny ones, and the vendor's like, "What are you doing?" I went, "Oh, I want the little tiny ones." And they're like, "Oh, okay." And I said, "I have this recipe. They're just delicious, you know, with the fresh new potatoes. The skins are so tender."
Oh, yes.
And with the fresh green beans, you know, it's just wonderful.
Well, now you see, this sounds exactly like a dry pisto. That's exactly what the pisto was root vegetables and leaf vegetables cooked at two different times and added together and then mixed with this basil oil nut mixture. So this is kind of a dry version of a slowed down dry version of it. I don't know how many people are making pisto anymore, but I still laugh at that when we found that out. As I say, Julia has there are two. Well, it's the same recipe in two of her books, but no mention of pesto in Julia.
Well, this is one of the reasons that I also freeze my pesto as I make it through the summer.
And do you put it?
I,
Do you? How do you do it?
I do the ice cube things too.
Yes.
Pop them into a Ziploc bag, and then I can, you know, pull out how many ever I need to make these dishes to remind me of summer.
Well, I may just give up, and since I can still get it at the market and make enough and make some ice cubes, I'll just do that.
Well, try these recipes. They are wonderful. The one with the Italian sausages is really nice and hearty, and it makes a wonderful meal.
That would be awfully good with the beans, yeah, and the potatoes. I like it.
Excellent.
Okay,
well, thank
you
very much. All right.
Hi.
And we go on here. Edgar County is the next person. Line number four. Hello.
Good morning, Doyle.
Hello there.
I gave you a recipe for pesto on the 2nd of April in 2003.
I thought so.
now that you hear my voice, you remember.
Well, I thought we had done a pesto program before.
Well, but I don't know whether it was. I don't remember that well about it. But the thing is, I'm very retentive, and I made a note in my. I don't want to go into that. And I made a note in my recipe book.
Oh yes.
That I gave to Master Chef Doyle Moore on April 2nd, 2003. WILL Radio.
Well,
I'm sorry, David, I didn't mention your
We've existed.
That's perfectly all right.
We've existed 6 more years.
Let's not use the word exist. By the way, I was in Champaign, Urbana at the same time you were back in the late 50s.
Late 50s, yes.
Yes. Except I graduated and went away.
And went away. I've stayed here.
Now, the one thing which I brought up at that time, and I'm quite sure if we go back in the archives, we'll find it. But anyway, the thing is that I never substitute salad oil for olive oil.
Oh, yes. Agreed.
Even though. But the recipe that I got from a lovely, sweet woman in Terre Haute, Indiana, Mrs. Lloyd, who had a wonderful restaurant in a barn called the Briar Patch Farm, you know, restaurant, was she substituted walnuts for pine nuts.
Now, yes, regular walnuts.
Yes.
Yeah. I make it with walnuts as well. Pine nuts.
Much cheaper.
Well, pine nuts are $18 a pound.
Oh, you noticed, yes.
But they are available, and you can get them. You can buy them bulk in several places here in town.
Right. Yeah.
But I made my last batch with walnuts mainly because I ended up with the walnuts and the basil at the same place at the same time, and so I said, "Well, that's just what I'll do." And I like it. It's a little bit different. It isn't what you see. The use of pine nuts is very ancient Roman.
Yeah, that's Roman, yeah.
And so
they get them easier than we do.
Well, but they also had them they had them a lot longer than we did.
Also, another thing is there's a bakery in Charleston, Illinois, called Simply Delicious Bakery. It's there on the square.
Uh-huh.
And they make the most fantastic pesto bread.
A pesto bread? Now, that's interesting.
It is just well, I can't talk.
You're drooling. Don't get it into the phone.
Yeah, it's happened before.
That sounds like a good. Well, I know there are a lot of breads with things like olives and other mixtures and additives
right.
to it. So I can see how pesto, because you would make up the pesto and I would imagine keep it a little bit stiff so that you could mix it into the bread.
Right.
That sounds good. Well, I'm glad to know about that. I didn't know about a bread.
And also like biscuits and muffins.
Oh, well, now.
I've done that. I just use the regular pesto base.
Yeah.
And then I add, you know, I use my pesto base when I mix it up into quarter cups. Because that way I put it in little quarter cup things.
Oh, yeah.
I freeze it, and then I wrap it up and airtight, you know, handy wrap or
right,
whatever.
Right, yeah.
And then I – but thing is, I hope you get over this aversion to.
Well, no, I have a question. I have a question. Yes, since you are wrapping it up, then it doesn't oxidize and turn black.
No,
it will stay green in the freezer.
The thing is, I'm somewhat colorblind, so don't push me on that.
Well, green and black are not too difficult to tell.
but the thing is it has a similar color to what you pick off the vine, off the plant.
Yeah, after I know that it oxidizes very quickly, even if you make it and set it out on the table right then, if you kind of scrape across the top, you'll see that the top is oxidized within a half hour.
Well, that's why you're supposed to put a olive oil, you know, on the top.
Oh, as an air block. Well,
yes.
That would do it. I don't do that.
Yes, well, you might try that.
Well, I might try that.
You won't be so upset about your pasta turning black. By the way, I did come across a... I know it just must ruin dinner parties.
Okay.
Let me ask you, and let me tell you another one. I just found, I have not tried it yet, but it is a mint and walnut pesto.
Mint and walnut, yeah.
Where you use about 2 ounces of leaves of fresh mint and about 12 sprigs of Italian parsley and 2 garlic cloves.
Okay, thin it down with parsley, yes.
Sea salt and gives lemon zest and freshly grated Reggiano or Grande Padano.
That sounds like a great idea.
Well, the thing is, mint is...
Mint, yes.
...is oftentimes very available in
yes.
the garden.
Yes,
and they would love for you to take it.
Well,
with you.
You're right.
But that would be my suggestion. But if anybody wants to have really good pesto bread, contact Simply Delicious Bakery.
Simply Delicious. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Great. Thank you. Well, here is, somebody was listening and sent in this note to our website. Who was listening to the show and said they recently had made a trip to Pasadena, California, and they had dinner at an Argentinian restaurant and had their first experience with chimichurri. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which he says is similar to pesto but uses parsley and lemon juice in addition to the olive oil and a raft of other spices and seasonings. And he says it's used as commonly as we use ketchup here, and it's excellent. He says as a dipping sauce, a pasta sauce or meat marinade. That's kind of what I think of it as a meat marinade. But it's another thing that's, you know, perhaps also in that same family. And apparently that has parsley, garlic, oil, vinegar, has some pimentum wither, as Emeril would say, and can also have things like paprika, oregano, cumin, thyme, cilantro, lemon, bay leaf, a lot of other things.
That is pretty complex.
Yeah.
Well, now that I'm thinking about it, the Italian salsa verde is very much like that. It's made up of a lot of green stuff and some oil, and I don't know what all else goes into that. I think onion, the salsa verde has 2 or 3 green things, but that would be the same function of making a spicy sauce. Out of vegetables.
Yeah.
Out of leafy vegetables.
Parsley, vinegar, capers, garlic,
capers.
Onion, anchovies, olive oil, maybe mustard.
Any olives? In it?
It doesn't mention olives.
Well, when you do that, then you end up with a tapenade, which is another, that's another show.
We have about 15 minutes. No, make that maybe about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus with this guy we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. First Wednesday of the month, we always talk about cooking with him. And this time around, he said, well, he's interested in having people talk about pesto, what you do with the traditional basil version and other versions
and other
as
versions.
Well that you might know of. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's next talk with someone in Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I know I'm not probably going to get many converts, but I'd like to advocate for the old-fashioned way of using a mortar and pestle.
Oh, yes. All right.
That was the first way I made it, and it takes about 20 minutes, but I found that... My theory is that you get more of the liquid that stays with it from the basil leaves. And I made it once or twice with a small-sized food processor, and you don't get the same effect. I don't know if it's because you're crushing the leaves with the.
Well, you're absolutely right. I've never really studied it a lot, but I do know that the mashing process, which you kind of drag the pestle across, and you want a nice, not a smooth surface of the mortar, but one that will kind of drag and tear up the leaves. Well, and you do get a better paste than that. When I'm making aioli, I use the mortar and pestle for exactly that reason, because garlic simply doesn't like to be just left alone. And if you sort of mash it and caress it, you get a totally different taste and texture and response to it. So I can see very easily that the green leaves would tear up in the same way. So it takes 20 minutes, huh?
That's about all, because, you know, you're not making – if I'm making it just for one meal, I don't make a huge amount, you know, so that works for me.
Well, I'll give that some thought. I won't necessarily convert right away, but I will certainly give some thought to that, because I do see that I do know that technique is going to cause a different kind of thing to happen. So I'll be interested in even giving that a try. That's very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good.
Right. Some new information.
Because I'm sure that really that what you're doing with the processor is you're slicing.
You're slicing it. Yes.
You're slicing it instead of crushing it. And I'm sure that he is right and you're right that's going to the end product is going to be something
I've
different.
I've got an idea.
Yes.
Start with a Cuisinart. Get 15 minutes of it done. Put it into a mortar and pestle and finish it up with the mashing of it, because you would then have something you could mash up very easily, and that mashing would make a lot of difference.
It would make it a lot quicker and easier to do.
Yes.
Well, do some experiments.
I will. I've got some thoughts in my mind now.
As Tom and Ray would say, apply the scientific method and come back and tell us about it. Line 3 is next, I believe, in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, my husband and I really enjoyed a recipe using pesto, which we didn't like the look of in the book, but it turns out to be one of our favorites.
Yes.
It's salmon. You slice the salmon before you cook it, salmon fillet.
Yes.
Fill it with spinach, and then put pesto over.
On the top.
On the top, and then you roast that the way you normally, oven bake the way you normally would bake your
Ooh.
Spinach. And something about...
Of course, there's oil in the top, and that's going to keep it moist. And,
yeah.
Oh, that sounds good.
You know, it sounded odd to us. It's from the South Beach Diet book, but it's now our favorite way to have salmon.
Well, that's a new way.
And I have to confess, because I'm baking the spinach, and it's in with other things, I have it all year round from the jar.
Yes.
It's not the same. You're right. It's not the same
but
as
if you're
having it fresh on pasta. But then,
but if you're going to bake it,
cooking it, and it's melting with the other flavors. It sort of permeates.
I'll allow that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I also have done the same thing with the sweet small baby potatoes. Instead of butter or other things, it's the best thing to have on small new potatoes.
Oh, just as a dressing on just on the potato.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pesto and potatoes were just. They were like made for each other. Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of an edge into a nice little potato salad that would be very delicate.
That's a good thought. I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much.
You.
Enjoying the program, David.
Very good. Thank you. Let's go on to somebody in McLean County on line 4.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question about, as you talked about basil, how much fresh basil to dry basil, like, out of a, you know, grocery store?
Well, now the general rule is that dried herbs are stronger than fresh ones.
Right.
And so you use more fresh ones than you would dried ones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if in the making of – I've never tried pesto with a dried, and I don't think that I would want that because it is that green, fresh that we've been talking about, the oils and the mashed up leaves that really give the texture to what we're talking about. But in answer to your question, the relationship, and a lot of recipes are now even saying, you know, use fresh basil. Well, if you don't have that, then use dried, but use less of the dried and more of the fresh when you're making certain dishes, whatever those are.
Okay. I was just curious because I made some stewed tomatoes.
Yes.
And I put some fresh basil in my garden, and I thought I put quite a bit. And
you needed more.
I probably tripled it.
Yes.
I can't even taste it.
Well, that's exactly, you're right. That's exactly right.
Okay. Could I ask you another quick question?
Sure.
You can give me where to find this because often that I'll be looking for some recipes. You'll ask for tomato paste or tomato sauce, you know, the jarred stuff.
Yes.
And even spaghetti sauce. I would like to make spaghetti sauce. I'd love to find some recipes totally made from scratch. How would you make tomato paste from scratch?
Well, probably what you would. You wouldn't use tomato paste because what that kind of is a concentrate that's made up that you use as a part of other recipes. Most of the recipes that I've heard about recently, they take regular tomatoes and some of them will blend up the tomatoes into a liquid, you know, liquefy them, either in the blender or the Cuisinart, and then cook that down and down and down, and then at another particular point, take fresh tomatoes and quarter them or dice them and throw them in at a certain point so that you have a couple of additions of fresh tomatoes. It would be the same tomatoes, but that gives a change in some of the texture. I don't think I would try to make tomato paste. I wouldn't worry about. I would just make a good fresh marinara with, as I say, some whizzed up juice and tomatoes, and then later on put in fresh tomatoes and just cook it down. It would take a good time to cook it because that'll thicken it and change it a little bit. But I don't think I'd even fuss with paste.
Actually, you answered my question. So that's homemade tomato paste.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, let's see. I think we have somebody here on our line number two. I think that maybe is someone in Urbana. Yes, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Doyle.
Hi.
I wanted to tell you that you can take cuttings from your garden plants and bring them in, put them in a glass or a vase,
that's,
have them in the kitchen.
You know what?
And they'll form roots.
I remember that from 1972.
Uh-huh.
I used to do that because I would try to extend it as far as I could after the summer. Yes, they will. They will grow. They will root.
And you can plant them in pots if you wish.
Yes.
And they'll go in partway into the winter even.
I had just forgotten about
and,
that.
And it's very nice to have them right there on your counter also. And I know that basil is... It's tender at about 40 degrees. So
yes.
Some of these nights are getting a little cool.
And they're
us.
Getting cool right away. Yes, they are.
So I just thought I'd let you know.
I had forgotten that. That's a great help. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
All right, thanks.
I remember that. I tried to extend it, you know, as far as I could.
Uh-huh.
And I do remember that as an activity that I did, which I've quit doing. But since I can buy more. But you used to not be able to buy it.
Yes,
that was
to,
it.
To get fresh basil
exactly.
was
so
almost impossible.
You coddled and took care of it as best you could.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah, let's get one more. White Heath, line one. Hello.
Hi. I was just going to answer that woman that called in about making tomato paste.
Yes.
The only reason you do that is because now everybody has so many tomatoes, but you have to. What I did, I made it once a long time ago, and I put it. You get all. Your tomato stuff out of the tomatoes and the juice and pulp and all that. And then you have to put it in your oven and let it sit there at a really low temperature for a really long time. And then all that water.
Oh, so you're going to kind of dehydrate a little bit. Yes.
But it takes hours and hours, like overnight or something. And it's sort of a waste of power.
Well,
but
yeah.
You can do it. And if you have all these tomatoes now, everybody's got tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
Then that's something to do with them. And it uses a lot of tomatoes that way.
Well, that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
That was the same.
And put it in a real thin pan, too. You don't want to, you know, like a big pot, but a real, so it, there's a lot of surface.
A big cookie sheet would be fine.
Yeah, with some sauce.
With a raised edge,
yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
That's a good idea. I'm glad to
great.
Know that. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
We're down at the point here. We have maybe about a minute or so left. Enough?
Have you
heard enough?
Well, no, I haven't heard enough.
Okay. Yes.
But another point. There is a sun-dried tomato pesto.
Oh, yes. I've seen that. You buy it in a tube.
Well, I guess so. But, I mean, you could take your own sun-dried tomatoes and make them into a pesto.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
yes, sun-dried tomato. It makes a lovely spread.
Yes.
That's what you get for your bruschetta. You put a little sun-dried tomato pesto on your bruschetta.
Yes.
Yes. Very good.
Now, let's say there's one more point that no one brought up. I'm just curious because I caught this probably less than a month ago on, I don't know, it zipped past me. A basil pesto. Spread on pork chops and then grill them. Pork chops. I mean, totally different from what we're talking about. But it was a pesto on pork chops and then grilled.
Well, we're going to have to stop.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop.
I would like to have lunch now, but I can't. I have to do another show. But next month, Doyle, we'll be back. I can't believe now it's September, actually.
It's
September
already.
And then we're talking
already.
About October. So some divine inspiration
will
come.
I don't know where it's going to come from. I was very excited about and I was satisfied today that pesto lives. Pesto rules.
Thank you very much. The man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, first
See
Wednesday of the month.
See you in October.
He's here. We talk about food and cooking. The broadcast made possible by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello. Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILO. The show also supported in part by Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Now, with four area locations, including inside the new Activities and Recreation Center north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus. More information at bodyworkassociates.com. WILL also thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio adjacent to Campbell Hall for public telecommunication. We're going to break for an update on the markets and news. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At 10:59 with this market update, I'm Tom Rogers. Another decline today led by the beans. Nearby spread weakened and longs liquidated positions amid big U.S. soybean crop outlooks, that is, brought down much of the rest of the market. Kansas City September wheat at 491 and three quarters right now, down 2.5 cents. December 508 and a half, down a penny and three quarters. In Chicago, September wheat is down 2 cents at 457 and a quarter. December 486 and a quarter, down one. Corn pit now, the nearby September at 310 and a half, down a penny and three quarters. December 316 and a half, down two and three quarters. And the March at 330, down 2.5. Energies look like this. Crude oil for October, 67.87, down 18 cents a barrel. RBOB gasoline up 2 1/10 at 180 and 3/10. September soybean.